From Sydney to Auckland and back again. Semi-finals, tick. Finals, here we come. I'm Rachel.
I'm Sophie.
And this is G'day from GOTB. So, no surprise, it's been a while. I think we thought as the knockout stages came around and there was less football, we'd be a little less busy. That was wrong.
Yeah, it's kind of amped up a bit, hasn't it? I think it feels like some people have just realised there's a World Cup going on. So it's all gone a bit, little bit mad, especially, I guess, with England being in the World Cup final. That's to be expected.
Yeah, and as well for us then having to get to Auckland. And then, of course, the semi-final's been back-to-back. So we had to get back the same day, which was pretty exhausting, I'm not going to lie. But last time we spoke, we were having the quarterfinals, which were, of course, very exciting. And they left us with a Spain versus Sweden semi-final and an England versus Australia semi-final. So we, of course, went over to New Zealand, went over to Auckland, which we were really excited about because I hadn't been to the North Island yet. And it was a lovely visit, despite the weather.
Yeah, we got absolutely soaked. My bad.
Why did we get absolutely soaked, Sophie?
I made you walk in the rain.
You made us walk. It was already spitting rain and you were like, it's really not that far. We'll just walk. It's just down the road. It's good for us. And the heavens opened. Like, it was that kind of almost hailstone type of rain.
Yeah, and I only had one pair of jeans, so I ended up hair drying them in the hotel room trying to get ready for dinner.
Yeah, we both went to dinner with wet feet as well because we only had one pair of trainers each. Lesson learned, I hope. And then we were able to have a little bit of a tour of Auckland. We went round on the big red bus and we went up the Sky Tower. We visited the fan zone, which is a really cool fan zone, really big fan zone.
Inside as well. Very sensible.
Yeah, well, in New Zealand, I think if you have an outdoor fan zone, you're just dicing with death there. And the sun came out and it was a lovely day. And then we went off to see Sweden versus Spain. I don't know about you, I thought Sweden might have had this one.
Yeah, I thought Sweden could beat them, but I think it came down to mentality at the end of the day. Yes, Salma
Parauelo.
Parauelo, is a very, very good and exciting young talent, and they have ridiculous talent in their midst, Spain. But, you know, I did think Sweden would have enough to get through them. But yeah, their heads let them down in the end.
I thought the way they dispatched like Japan and the USA and teams like that, after the US game, they played better. And yeah, I thought they played really well for 60 minutes. They seemed to have a really good game plan for 60 minutes. They put Spain under a lot of pressure. They gave them very little time on the ball. And it was working. And of course, Sweden were defending well. They liked to defend. But then they sat back and, you know, Alexia Putellas went off. She was replaced by Salma Parauelo, which I've been practicing. And Hermoso dropped back into the 10 and she played up front. And she just gave them that directness that I think Spain lacks sometimes.
And energy. And like, she is ridiculous. I mean, she's 19 years old. And that's just scary what she can do when she hits her peak. She's not even... I think... So I wrote an article about her the other day and she's only been in professional football for a year, just fully focused on football. So she signed for Barcelona last summer. She was playing for Villarreal before that, but she was also doing athletics. So she's a 400-metre champion as well in athletics. She went to the European Championships at just 15 years old. So she was a multi-talented sports star growing up. But yeah, to think after, you know, 1 year of playing just dedicated to football and she's won the Under-20 World Cup with Spain and now is in a World Cup final, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, she'd been like eyeing up the Olympics, hadn't she, with her athletics career? And then she's like, no, I'm also absolutely amazing at football. So why don't I just go and do that and be in a World Cup final at 19? You know, no big deal. Yeah, I thought she obviously made the difference. And then when they scored in the, 81st minute, I kind of thought that is game over. Spain are going to win it. And then Hero Hurtig comes on. Bloody hell, she's having some tournament off the bench. Nods it down for Rebecca Blomqvist, whose name I can never properly pronounce. I apologise. Blomqvist, is that right? I'll Google it. And that was a great goal. That was like right in front of me, 86th minute. I was like, oh my God. But then I was like, no, we're going to go to extra time. And we've got a 6 a.m. flight the next morning. We're basically not going to go to bed. And fortunately for us and super unfortunately for Sweden, they seem to just still be celebrating by the time Spain got the equaliser about a minute and a half later. Not the equaliser, the winner.
Not so fortunately for me though. Because at that point, I was like, yes, I want my sleep. And yes, I know we've got to be up so early in the morning. But I'm writing on the whistle report. And on the whistle reports are absolute hell when there are goals that late in the game that change things. So, you know, I basically had it written after the goal from Salma. I was like, had everything written. Then Sweden go and bloody score. And I'm like, okay, well, at least I've got another half an hour probably to write this. And then Spain go and score a minute later. I'm like, this is not on. Like, if you're going to have at least, like, if you're going to bother to try and equalise, at least have the decency to take it to extra time just for me, just for my writing, because that is not on. I'm sorry. But yes, also they were still celebrating and that is also not on because for a team that is so experienced and so, savvy at this level, the fact that they were all celebrating then basically let Spain walk down, win a corner, left Olga Kimono completely open off the corner, allowed her just, you know, set herself, take the time, and then hit that shot. It was just like, I'm sorry, I just can't forgive them for that.
Won't somebody please think of the writers? I really was quite heartbroken for Sweden because we've seen them in so many semi-finals. They're semi-final queens. It's very much a always the bridesmaid, never the bride kind of situation for them. And I really thought this was their tournament. And you could just see the heartbreak on the pitch. And now they have to gear themselves up for a third place game. They've won the bronze medal before, I think twice, maybe three times before. So, yeah, you know, whatever happens tomorrow, a team in yellow will win. And that's, you know, nice and sunny. Because, of course, they will be facing Australia. That is who we then flew back on that disgustingly early flight to watch against England. And I think we've spoken a bit about it already. The way this nation have gotten behind the Matildas is quite a sight to behold. We kind of bleary-eyed went down for brunch near our Airbnb. You know, we must have looked an absolute sight, like we'd had a heavy night, which we didn't. We just hadn't had any sleep. So we were piling on the coffee and the eggs and everything else. And these two old ladies behind us were chatting away about the match and how they thought it was going to go. And I couldn't help myself. And I turned around and we had a lovely chat about football.
Yeah, I think I've said it on various occasions, that shows how much has permeated, those kind of interactions show how much has permeated through society here. I was thinking yesterday, I'm trying to put into words my thoughts about this tournament and how I can write it down. And I think I'm a little bit too emotional about it at the moment. I need to have a think because it has been truly a special, special month. Probably beyond what we ever thought, I think, when we came to Australia. So yeah, it's been special, and the way that Australia have embraced the Matildas and the football, and you get 75,000 going to a non-Australia football match, that's ridiculous. You know, like, it's what should happen, don't get me wrong, and I always fully believe that eventually the product will be there for people to enjoy and watch and come in their numbers, but I probably didn't realise it was going to happen so quickly.
Yeah, I think women's football continues to surprise us despite us being so fully invested in it and believing in it so wholeheartedly. It's when things happen so quickly. And I think maybe it's because we always find ourselves in a space where we're having to prove, it feels like we have to prove why women's football should get its support, why it should be shown on TV. And actually, that's what then ends up making us underestimating how well it's going to be supported. And maybe it's because we have these idiots being allowed onto radio and TV who don't even like women's football to talk about women's football, which would never happen in any other sport. Can you imagine like some Premier League show going, oh, let's get like Joe Bloggs from the street who hates football. Let's bring them on the show and like find out what they think about it. That would just never happen. But for some reason, it's all right to get people who don't like women's football to tell us why they don't like women's football. It just does my head in.
It's
don't watch
so
it.
Boring.
It's fine. We don't need you. We're not going to try and convince you. We're good. There's millions and millions and millions of people, billions watching it, turning up. Just go away. Anyway, I'm going to get off my soapbox now. Let's talk about the match. The match was very exciting. I think England took the lead, obviously, through Ella Toon. Super goal from her, and you were very pleased to see her get that goal.
I was. I think Ella's been massively lacking in confidence, and it's garnered her some criticism along the way, and probably quite rightly because her performances haven't quite got up to scratch. I mean, I've been one of them, not to necessarily criticise, but just to think she's not quite at the level that she could be this tournament. But you could see as soon as that goal went in, the sort of confidence level, the battery grow and grow and recharge and recharge. And she looked absolutely delighted. And like the kind of finish it was as well. It wasn't an easy finish. It was top quality. So I think that will do her the world of good. She's come off not the best season for United. I don't think she's been in the best form. But there's no denying the talent that she has. It's just, you know, form drops at times. And it's just been unlucky for her that around this period it's been dropping. But yeah, that will do her the world of good.
Yeah, and then, of course, we had Sam Kerr pop up, get the equaliser, make us all think, oh, God, maybe this isn't going to go the way we planned. It was a weird kind of feeling because I was like, I am so pleased that she's gotten a World Cup goal on this stage at a home World Cup in such a, like, important match in front of 75,000 people. And then the other side of me was going, shit. God damn it. This better not go to extra time again. I can't be dealing with it. I don't need the stress. But luckily or unluckily for Australia in the end, Lauren Hemp restored the lead pretty quickly. But the Sam Kerr goal was a super kind of solo strike. I was pretty disappointed with how Bright and Carter, who trained with her week in, week out, just decided to run backwards as she ran at them. Almost like, come on, keep coming, come on, have a shot, it's fine. That was very frustrating to watch, and they cannot get away with that kind of thing against Spain. But look, Lauren Hemp, yeah, restored the lead, had another game of her life, has really stepped up in this tournament. You've written an article about her. You've also written an article about Alessia Russo, who then scored the third goal, which I appreciated because I did worry England were going to try and time waste for like 25 minutes. And thankfully, they got a third goal to properly put the game to bed. But you want to plug your two lovely articles? Because I thought they were great.
Yeah, I think it's been one of the highlights of England's campaign so far is the, like, unexpected partnership between Lauren Hemp and Alessia Russo up front. Both were struggling maybe a little bit in terms of confidence coming into the competition. I think in my article I wrote about how Alessia Russo, you know, went from being that super impact sub, doing that backheel, wonderful backheel last year against Sweden, to now being like the front person, player, leader of the team up front. And it carries an awful lot of weight on your shoulders, I think. When you are playing in that number nine role, and especially when you take out the likes of Beth Mead, basically England's main source of goals for the last 18 months, or well, before she got injured, and also her deliveries that, you know, Alessia Russo would absolutely thrive off Beth Mead's deliveries into the box. And then also Fran Kirby, the understated creative cog behind the English front line, who, you know, moves the space for the strikers to work, but also, you know, has the vision to produce the passes for Russo to run onto.
She was, of course, the creator of that infamous backheel too.
She was. So I think Alessia Russo has had to, like, shift herself a lot or shoulder a lot of the burden as well. But I think now that she plays in that front too with Hemp, who... their styles really complement each other. They know each other very well. They play together at youth level. It shows they have this sort of instinctive understanding of where the other will be. They are both like aggressive in the press. They run and run and run and they won't stop. And they've both got speed as well and technical ability. So I think they really complement each other. It's been one of the delights of the tournament.
And now just the small matter of Spain in the final. What I think is really interesting about this one is that both of these teams can beat each other. Right, you're not. It's not going in against like a USA that has won everything under the sun on multiple occasions. Neither of these teams have won the World Cup. Both of these teams know they can beat each other. It feels a bit like who's going to manage the occasion best and who's going to get their tactics right and who's going to be able to maintain those tactics for 90 minutes, because I think Sweden is a good example of getting the tactics right but then not being able to see out the 90 minutes doing that way of style of play. And I think it's going to be a little bit like a chess match.
I think it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I think we've said it all along that every team, every favourite in this tournament has had weaknesses, right, for the other teams to exploit. And England have their weaknesses, as do Spain. Spain's back line is questionable at times. And I do wonder how they're going to handle Hemp and Russo running at them. Yeah, it's going to be really intriguing. I think in terms of managing the occasion, on paper, you would expect that England would be better equipped for that because they were in the final, a major final last year. They've been there, they've done it, they've won it. They know what, like how they will feel when they walk through the tunnel you know, yes, the World Cup was the pinnacle, but they've already had that practice run where they've walked through the tunnel against Germany at Wembley with 90,000 people out there screaming. They've already been had that practice. And while some of the Spanish players obviously play at Barcelona, so they've had Champions League and all of that stuff, a World Cup is different, and it's not Barcelona. It's a whole group of them who maybe don't have that same kind of experience. So you would think that mentality side, England would have the edge, but you never know.
Yeah, it's one of those games where either team is going to be drawing on every single little bit of something that will give them the edge. And whether it, for England, it's drawing on the fact that they've been in a final and won a final before, or Spain drawing on the fact that they've got so many winners in their team, like every little bit that's going to give you that extra edge, I think they'll be looking for and exploiting. And once again, it makes it so, so hard to call. But hopefully when we are back recording, which will be the day after the final on the Monday, hopefully it will be a very happy pod after what will no doubt be an epic final. But either way, history will be made.